Welcome to Caffeine, Crime and Canines, a podcast brought to you by two girls who love their dogs, love coffee, but most importantly, love true crime. Good morning.
Hello, Lockie. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
What is happening?
Oh, well, it's been a bit of a crazy week for me. I am on holidays last minute.
Love that.
I'm in Broadbeach. We flew up yesterday and honestly, it was a really crap flight. Our flights were delayed.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was just like shit. The aircon wasn't working originally. So can you imagine how hot the freaking plane was?
Who did you fly with?
Virgin.
Okay, yeah. So we're going to Port Douglas on Wednesday, also flying with Virgin.
Oh, really? Well, I hope you have a better flight. Like ours was just, it was shit. As I said, it was delayed. The thing wasn't working and I upgraded our seats. And honestly, thank God I did. To you pay like $75, but you're sitting like you've got extra leg room and stuff.
Oh, cool.
So I did do that. I think it's worth it for sure. But like there's no, obviously because they're like little planes, there's no like TVs or like you've got to watch it like from your phone, you know what I mean? Like they've got like the Virgin, you've got to download the app from before you get on, and there's like an entertainment thing that you can watch from your phone.
Yeah. So weird.
I know. And do you know what's even crazier, right? Because when I booked, it's got like the little Wi-Fi thing, but it's not Wi-Fi for like the internet, it's Wi-Fi for like Virgin, if that makes sense. So you can only access like the Virgin stuff.
Yeah.
And obviously I just wasn't thinking, like, I was like, oh yeah, we'd have internet, but lucky I was prepared anyway. I had to write our notes for the podcast anyway, so I had my laptop and I was ready to go. But yeah, and then can I tell you something else? So we come up here all the time and we always stay at the same place. Oh, you know me, lucky I'm a creature of habit, and I feel like already, like, I regret not just staying, like, the place we stay at. I love the location. I love the place, but it has gotten older. Like, you know what I mean? Like over the years, because we've been staying at the same place for like, I'm not kidding you, like 10, 15 years, right? And then we're like, this year, we're like, let's go somewhere like nicer, like a little bit more like luxury, you know, newer. Anyway, so we booked this place. I'm not going to say because I'm still here and I'm maybe if I complain, I will, I'll update you next week. So we booked this place. It's obviously more expensive. It's one of like the top places to stay here. We get in, we're already grumpy because of the freaking flight, whatever. Anyway, Lockie, one, this place, when we booked through Expedia, I just assumed it was going to be through the actual apartment place, but it was through like a real estate agent, so we had to pick up the keys. I'm like, all right, that's fine, whatever. Like, you know me, I'm a bit old school, but I was like, no worries. We come here, the windows are filthy, like disgusting. When I say disgusting, I mean they're foggy. Like you can't, like looking out, it's gross. It literally looks like you're in a jar and someone's like put hot breath all over you. It's gross.
Ew. Oh my God.
And I'm not like a Karen, but I cannot stand like looking outside. And we got like ocean views, but all you can see is filthy windows.
Oh my God.
And wait a sec, that's not even the end of it. The freaking tap where you wash your hands, like the water doesn't drain. There's something wrong with the drain.
It's
God. There's so much stuff. Anyway, so I'm pretty sure I'm going to complain.
Yes, which, definitely.
And you know me with, like, I just hate confrontation, but we're here for another few nights and I'm like, no freaking way. Like, either way, we're happy to go stay somewhere else. That's how much we're just not a fan of this place. So,
God. Anyway,
I will re-update you next week on what happened. But, yeah.
You know, speaking of holidays, so we're obviously going – to Port Douglas on Wednesday, and Elsie, because she's not two, she still sits on our lap,
but she's like
a month away from being two, so she could really, like, I think she really needs her own seat, but anyway, whatever, she's gonna sit on my lap. And I emailed Virgin and I just said, like, hey, I'm really nervous about her flying because she's gonna be a nightmare. I can already tell, like, she doesn't sit still, you know, like, she, yeah, it's gonna be a nightmare. And I just said, would you be able to just put our seats somewhere that's not gonna disrupt other passengers? And I thought that would be like the last row on the plane or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
Didn't want to annoy everyone. And he goes, the person, the customer service, yes, I've allocated your seats 16A and 16B, which is the middle of the plane. It's window seat and a middle seat, which means there's going to be a person sitting in the aisle that we're going to annoy getting in and out. I was just like, in what world is that that's an appropriate solution? Like, so that's actually worse.
Hey, wait, I wonder though if that is the economy. I wonder if that's like the, you know, the aisles where they're like,
nah.
Oh, it's not.
No.
Fudge. Oh, that is so weird, Lockie.
And then I just went in last night to try and like pick better seats, and like the flight's like pretty full. So like I can't, there's nothing else that really suits. So we're stuck in the middle, which means we're going to be like last to get off the plane as well. Like, so stupid.
Anyway. Fudge. Yeah, that sucks. Honestly, and like especially, I'm hoping, is this the first time she's flown or has she flown before?
She flew once before, but she was a lot younger and it was only like a 45-minute flight. So it's going to be very different.
I wonder, what you can do to distract her, just like keep her mind off of like
we'll see.
Everything. Yeah.
We'll see how it goes.
I hope it goes good. Like, yeah, hopefully it's not as bad as what you've built it up to, because sometimes you do that just to like, you know what I mean? Mentally prepare.
My next kind of plan of action is when we do check in, I'm going to ask the desk, like, hey, if there's any seats that are better, like, please just put us there.
Yeah. Because I'm actually surprised. Literally... I definitely would have thought they would have put you sort of like you said, at the back or at the front, like, so it's not smack bang in the middle.
Yeah.
And you did the right thing by messaging as well. So that's surprising.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll see how it goes.
I was really lucky that on the way up, there was no one like, in our aisle, so I got the window seat.
Oh,
like,
that's so good.
There was no one in between. It was really good. So, I hope you have something similar.
I will update everyone.
Yeah.
Any other news? Or
honestly, that's about it this week.
Me too. I feel like it's only 10 o'clock here, but it's like, I feel like my morning has been pretty crazy already.
You know, it's only 9 o'clock here. Because I'm an hour behind. Yeah, and I've already been to the gym. Good. So I'm like, I got
all of these time zones. Like, I caught up with Danny this morning to talk about her wedding, and she's 2 hours ahead. So I had to, like, I did 9 o'clock here. So it was not like in the middle of the day for her. And then now, obviously, we recorded 10, but it's actually not. It's like.
How funny, right? But should we get started in this week's case, Lockie?
Yes, let's do it.
Okie dokie.
DC Emergency 911, operator 6752. Do you need police, fire, or ambulance?
Immediately. I'm needing an ambulance.
What's wrong, ma'am?
We had someone that was in our house, evidently, and they stabbed somebody.
Okay, somebody's inside the house now?
I don't know. We heard.
Are they bleeding? You see someone bleeding?
Someone is bleeding in our house.
Okay, where are they bleeding from?
I think in the stomach.
In the stomach? Is he cautious? Calm down for me. I'm going to send some help, okay? Female or male?
It's a male. He's a friend of ours. He's spending the night with us.
Okay, and who was the person that stabbed him? Do you know? Is he conscious?
We need an ambulance.
Ma'am, listen to me.
He's not conscious.
He's not conscious at all?
No. We need someone right now.
Is he breathing? Listen to me. Calm down. I'm going to help you, okay? Is he breathing?
I'm upstairs, and he's downstairs. I don't know.
Okay, who's downstairs with him?
My partner is downstairs with him right now. He told me to go upstairs and call the police immediately. I just went to the stairs.
Okay, who's the person? Okay, I'm sending paramedics and the police. Okay, who's the person that stabbed him?
I don't know. We think it's somebody with an intruder in the house. We heard the chime at the door.
And it's 15, ma'am, calm down. 1509 Swan Street Northwest, am I correct?
Yes, it is.
The person that stabbed him, is he still in the home?
I don't know.
We got help en route, okay?
Pardon me?
We have help en route.
Thank you. They're
They are en route to you now. I'm sending the police and the paramedics, okay, to assist. Okay, what I need you to do is go downstairs, okay? The place where, wherever he was stabbed at, I need you to get a dry cloth, okay? And just apply pressure to that area. If he was, wherever he was stabbed at on his body, I need you to take a towel downstairs while you're waiting for the paramedics to arrive and just apply pressure. Even if the rag or towel is saturated with blood, just get another towel and put it on top, but never lift the first towel off the area. Hold it on. Once it gets filled up with blood, just put another towel on top of that and just apply pressure until the paramedics arrive. Yes.
Paramedics on the leg.
Yeah.
With
in the heart?
Yes. In the center of his chest.
Okay. Is he breathing?
Is he breathing?
We have help him right now, okay? You don't know who it was?
No idea. So Don't touch.
Okay, is he breathing?
He's breathing, but
he needs help now. Okay, we have help en route, ma'am, okay? We do have help en route. Okay, just go down there and try to tell your husband or your other the other half to just try to keep him calm and talk to him, okay? Keep him calm and talk to him until someone gets there.
Okay.
And at the same time, get a dry cloth and just hold it right there in the area.
My partner's holding the...
Okay.
Holding it on him.
Okay, and once it gets saturated with blood, tell him get another one. Go get another towel so you can apply it on top of that one once it gets filled up with blood.
Okay.
We need you to apply pressure on that area.
He is applying pressure right now.
Okay, just hold it there until the paramedics get there. They should be pulling up any moment. If they're already en route to your location, you don't know who did this.
We have no idea who did this.
Is the door open so they can get in?
We don't know how they got in.
Okay, but I'm asking you now, is the door open so the paramedics can get in once they get here?
What? Sorry. What were you saying?
Is the door open so they can get in? Is the door open so the paramedics can get in the home?
I'm going to go down.
Is this a private home or apartment?
It's a home.
It's a home. It's 1509 what? Swan Street Northwest.
The person had one of our knives.
The person that stabbed him ran out the door with a knife?
I think.
Okay, anybody get any type of description of the person that came in the home?
We have no idea. We have no description. We heard the chime, and we heard the scream from our friend.
Okay.
And so we came running downstairs. We ran in.
So you both was upstairs and your friend was downstairs?
Yes.
You heard the door open and then you heard the scream?
I didn't hear the door open until after the scream, and then we ran down the stairs and we have an alarm, and so the chime went off.
Okay.
Is the ambulance, please, we really need the ambulance.
Okay, they're in route now, ma'am. Go to the door. They should be pulling up any moment, okay?
I'm afraid to go downstairs.
Okay, the person who's downstairs was the person that was assaulted.
No, we're on the second floor.
Okay, so somebody need to go downstairs and open the door for the paramedics. You're not sure if that person's still in the home or not.
I have no idea.
Okay, we have paramedics en route, okay?
What time is it?
What time is it at the moment?
Yes.
23:54. It's 11:54, ma'am.
11:54.
Yes.
I mean...
I'll stay on the line with you. I will stay on the line until somebody gets here, okay? I won't hang up.
We need them right now. I'm not hanging up, but we need help now.
Okay, they're en route, ma'am. They are en route. Let me know when you hear the paramedics. Can you look out the window and see if you hear them coming?
I'm looking out the window and I see nothing. I see nobody.
Okay, it seems like forever, but they are en route, ma'am. They're coming.
Here they are.
They're there.
I'm going downstairs.
Okay. I'll stay on the line with you till you open the door for the paramedics, okay?
Help us. We have someone with stabbed. They're on our second floor.
Ma'am?
No, it's really an emergency. I mean, he may be. Please hurry.
Ma'am, it's gonna be okay.
Oh,
Okay, so this week's case was requested to us by Daniel. Thank you so much for this request. Honestly, it is one of the most perplexing cases we have ever covered. And I've never used that word for a case, I don't think.
Mm.
And I'm not kidding, by the end of it, like, I'm still pulling my hair out. Like, I cannot wait to discuss this with you.
Mm-hmm.
Also, a heads up, it is a little X-rated.
A little.
A little. I'm going to try and tiptoe around these details, but yes, probably the most X-rated case that I can think of that we've covered. So heads up on that.
Mm. Yeah.
So this week we will be discussing the case of Robert Wan. So Robert Eric Wan was born on June 1st, 1974 in Manhattan and was raised in Brooklyn, New York. His father, William, worked at a bank as a technology executive, and his mother, Amy, was a librarian. Robert had two younger brothers. Robert was a bright student. He graduated as a valedictorian from a Catholic high school before venturing to the College of William and Mary on a scholarship, where he graduated in 1996 with a fancy reward for his outstanding character.
Wow, that must be like a private college.
Yes. It does. And it does, like, obviously he got this fancy reward, but it does sound like a fancy college also.
Hmm.
So during his time there, he played a pivotal role in reviving the 13th Club. And Lockie, this is a secret society, but not one of those dodgy ones, right? It's dedicated to performing random acts of kindness. Do you know how much I freaking love this? Like, how cool is that? Like, it's just I don't know. There's something about it, right? Anyway. He was also known to carry around spare change to put into parking meters that were about to expire. He would bring snacks to the library when people were studying hard, and he even once snuck out to clean bird poo off some campus statue. He's literally just like an all-around good guy.
Yeah.
So post-graduation, Robert pursued law at the University of Pennsylvania Law School, graduating with honors in 1999.
Imagine being a college student in the 90s.
Oh, Mike, you know, that's my dream. I always say this all the time. I feel like I've just born like 10 years too late, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in 2002, Robert crossed paths with his future wife, Catherine, at a conference in Philadelphia. Their relationship blossomed into a long-distance romance, with the couple speaking every night at 8 p.m. Robert's romantic proposal soon followed after a memorable trip to China. And this was pretty quick. Like, as I said, they were just like, they met, they were sort of long-distance dating, and then he proposed. So I think he just knew she was the one.
Yeah.
Launching his professional career, Robert began as a clerk for a federal judge, eventually officiating at his own wedding to Catherine. So his boss, pretty much, like, this judge officiated their wedding.
That's nice.
It is. Later, he ventured into real estate development law, where he dedicated a significant amount of time to pro bono work for causes that were close to his heart. So Robert was a proud fourth-generation Chinese-American, and a lot of his pro bono work was to do with, like, the Chinese community. He actively participated in a lot of the communities, including the Organization of Chinese-Americans. He also had recently been elected as the president of the Asian Pacific American Bar Association.
Lots of achievements.
Yes. And you know what? Like, there are just, he was part of so many, like, associations. There's just too many to name. But a lot of them that are close to his heart are all to do with, like, do you know what I mean? Chinese Americans. Like, he just really wanted to do all he could for this community. So at the time our story takes place, Robert was 32 years old, living in suburban Oakton, Virginia, with his wife, Catherine. The couple had been discussing adoption as Catherine's health condition, she had lupus, and the potential risks of pregnancy could have put her life in danger. And do you know what's crazy? Like, Catherine talks about how she thought that when she told, you know, Robert that she had lupus, that he sort of wouldn't want to be with her. How sad is that? Yeah, it's like, don't be ridiculous. Like, so anyway, yeah, so they're discussing adoption. So despite taking a pay cut, Robert had just started a position as the general counsel at Radio Free Asia. He really wanted to make a difference to the community, and Catherine supported him, telling him, I don't need to drive a Lexus. I'm happy with our Honda. So Robert's new role was located in Washington City, a while away from where they lived. Robert and Catherine would commute to and from work together. However, on August 2nd, Robert had to stay late for a legal education course, and he also wanted to meet his late-night staff. Anticipating a late finish and an early commute the next morning, he decided it would make more sense to spend the night in the city.
I feel like it's very normal for people that work in Washington. They don't live in Washington.
Yes.
I mean, Washington's very expensive.
Yeah, I heard that as well. Like, even just researching this case, this is the norm.
Yeah.
So in preparation, Robert reached out to some friends, including his college friend, Joseph Price, who he hadn't caught up with for some time. Despite life getting busier, the two had remained close friends over the years. Joseph had attended Robert and Catherine's wedding with his partner, Victor. You know, which I love that name anyway. And the couple had even hosted Robert's 30th birthday party.
Yeah, so close friends.
Yes. And even though, like, some people are like, oh, they hadn't seen each other for ages. I don't think that means you're not close anymore. It just means that, you know what I mean? Like, life gets busy.
Yeah.
The fact they stayed in contact means they were good friends, you know?
Yeah.
So Joseph, a successful lawyer with an impressive pro bono record, had a notable history as the president of the school's Gay and Lesbian Alumni Association in college and was a leader and advocate for gay rights. Furthermore, he dedicated much of his time as one of the founders and general counsel for Equity Virginia and worked on a number of high-profile gay rights cases. So that was just, you know, his passion. He really was just working towards, like, gay rights.
There's so many male names in this case. I was always getting confused. So Joseph is Robert's friend from that college. Lives in Washington. Yeah.
Yes. Yep. And not only that, but Joseph is a little bit older. I think he's like 3 years older than Robert. And when Robert attended that, remember we're talking about like that fancy college? What was it called? I think it was William and Mary.
Yeah.
When he attended that college, I'm quite sure that's where he met Joseph and he became his mentor. And Joseph was also part of that 13th club.
Yep.
So that's like just, you know, like a little bit of background on him. So Joseph lived in a 3-level million-dollar townhouse on Swan Street in Washington's DuPont Circle neighborhood. Joseph shared his townhouse with his partner, Victor, who was an accomplished marketing executive who worked for the International Dairy Foods Association. And every time, like, I was looking into this case, everyone's like, Victor was part of the Got Milk campaign. I don't know what that is, but apparently that's a massive campaign in America. And do you know what, right? I wonder, because one of the photos when I was reading an article about this is, like, a celebrity, I think, and they've got, like, a milk moustache. I feel like that's very 90s. And even, like, this is going to sound so random, but I'm pretty sure in the 90s I had a photo, like a poster of Hanson, and they had like a milk moustache, and it made me think, like, was this Victor's campaign? I wonder.
Maybe.
Could be, right? Anyway, the couple had a unique family arrangement, sharing 2 children with a lesbian couple. In addition to Victor and Joseph, their friend Dylan also lived with the couple. Dylan, who initially studied children's literature, later became a massage therapist. Another friend named Sarah rented the basement in the townhouse. And although, like, I'm just mentioning Sarah, she did live in the house, but she was spending the night at a friend's the night our story takes place. So she lived there, yeah. But she's not really part of our story, you know?
Yep, yep.
So the townhouse was a historical landmark. And as I mentioned, it featured three levels with Victor and Joseph in the main room on the third floor, Dylan in the bedroom on the second floor, and Sarah occupying the basement.
Yeah, so they kind of each had their own areas of the house.
Yes,
you know, exactly. Like they were separated.
Yeah, and you know what? Just keep in mind, like this townhouse, it was one of those ones that were like, it was like a row, if that makes sense, of townhouses. So they were wall-to-wall connected with other townhouses.
Yeah.
And I feel like I've sort of set the stage for our story. I don't know if you want to add anything in, Lockie,
or any questions. So. I think, like, just to confirm, so Victor and Joseph were the gay couple that were friends with Robert. They owned the house. They had two roommates, Dylan and Sarah. I feel like when I was researching this, I was just getting so confused with all the names.
Yep. Like, no, that's completely correct. But also, I guess it is just important to mention that Joseph was friends with Dylan as well. So when I said that Joseph had held Robert's 30th birthday party, because they did host it, it was Joseph, Victor, and Dylan that all hosted the party. And there is actually a photo of them holding the cake and Robert, like, blowing out the candles. So they were all friends, but obviously, what's it called? Robert met Dylan and Victor through Joseph, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And you may mention this later on, but Dylan, they had like a bit of a polyamorous, is that what the word is? Relationship, is that right?
Yes, yes, yeah.
Yeah.
They did. Yeah. And we'll get into that later. But yeah, that sort of sets the scene for our story.
All right, let's get into it.
All right, let's do it.
Disclaimer.
Yes. So on the morning of August 2nd, Robert and Catherine travelled to work together. Robert worked a full day attending the evening seminar. Remember I was telling you about that's why he had to stay back. And then he met with the night staff at his office. He called Catherine in between to update her on his movements. At around 10:30 p.m., Robert called Joseph to let him know that he would be heading over. Sarah, remember, had planned to stay the night at a friend's, so she wasn't home. And Victor, having had a long day at work, was already in bed watching Project Runway when Robert arrived.
Yep.
Despite not having seen Joseph and Dylan for a while, the men only had a casual chat in the kitchen and decided to catch up properly in the morning. I think Robert was just exhausted from his day, you know?
Yeah. They said that they just had a glass of water in the kitchen and then that was kind of the extent of the interaction.
Yeah, exactly. Around 11 p.m, Joseph and Dylan showed Robert to the study where they had set up a fold-out bed for him. Joseph then joined Victor in bed to catch the last, I think it was like the last 5 minutes of Project Runway. And Dylan retired to his room after taking a sleeping tablet and he drifted off while reading a magazine. Shortly before midnight, Joseph and Victor were awoken by a scream and the sound of their door chimes. Now, I was like, what the heck are these door chimes? Or like, what is this? But apparently it's like a security device and it alerts you when the doors are opened.
Yeah.
So they originally thought it was just Sarah returning home, like she had a change of plans, you know, but they became concerned when they heard a scream.
Yeah.
Joseph and Victor went to investigate and discovered that Robert had been stabbed. A knife from their kitchen was found on Robert's stomach. And when Joseph peeked underneath Robert's t-shirt, he saw stab marks.
Yeah.
All this commotion woke Dylan. Joseph instructed Victor, who was hysterical, to call 911. And this is the call you heard at the very start of the episode.
Yep.
Yes, the phone operator mistakenly identified Victor as a woman. I'm guessing that, like, the stressful situation would have raised his voice a little, and he never corrects her.
Yeah.
I do want to say that I do like this particular phone operator. Like, there are some
operators. I love her accent.
Yes, same. And some of them make me fume, but this one in particular, yeah, I think it's her accent and just the way, I don't know, she's approaching the situation. She's trying to remain calm. She's giving him advice. She's saying, like, I'll stay on the phone with you. Like, there's just something about her that I really liked.
Can I also just ask, so Robert was sleeping on a fold-out bed in the study. Do we know what level of the townhouse the study was on?
Yes. So he was on the second floor. So this is the same floor that Dylan is on. Yeah. And he was, I think from memory, this study was facing, it was the front of the house. It was facing out. And to get to this room, you'd have to pass Dylan's room. So when you come up the stairs, it's Dylan's room straight away, and then you have to turn to go to the end of the corridor to hit the study, if that makes sense. Now, if you remember in the 911 call, Victor says that there was an intruder that attacked their guest while they slept. He mentions the door chimes and the knife. The 911 operator instructs Victor to apply pressure to the wounds, and Victor informs her that his partner is doing so. Things I find a little strange in this call is he asks the operator what time it is. Like, did you find that weird?
Yeah.
It's so random. And he also mentions in this 911 call that the intruder left with their knife.
Yeah.
Like, what? How would you even know that if you didn't see the intruder and there's a knife in the room? Like, that doesn't make sense to me.
That's very, as I was just about to say, like, it doesn't really make sense.
No, it doesn't.
Why he would say that. Yeah.
Yeah. The paramedics arrived at the scene at 11:54 p.m. And this is within 7 minutes of that 911 call. I think that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. And I think that's also very important.
Yes.
Seven minutes. Yeah.
Despite their efforts, they were unable to save Robert, and he was pronounced dead at George Washington University Hospital at 12:24 a.m.
And then the paramedics that arrived on the scene were very experienced. Like, I think they had like 25 years on the job between them, and they'd been to a lot of different cases and different scenarios. And they said that when they walked into this scene, it was weird. Something was off. It wasn't normal to them.
Yes, exactly right. And we will touch on that now. There was just something odd about it, right? So upon their arrival, Victor, in a white robe, who had let paramedics in, directed them towards the study where Robert was located. They encountered Dylan with a towel around him in the hallway, who remained silent. I think they had asked him, like, what happened. He remained silent, right? And he pointed in the direction of where the study was, and then returned back into his bedroom, and he shut the door behind him, which I think that was probably their first sign of what the heck's going on here. It's just not a normal sort of – it's not just a normal behavior that you'd probably expect from someone, do you know what I mean, that's witnessed a stabbing or, like, has been, do you know what I mean, in a house with someone that's been stabbed.
Yeah.
In the study, Joseph was in his underwear, kneeling over Robert, but the experienced paramedics were surprised to find that Joseph was not applying pressure to the assumed wounds, and there was not much blood on Robert.
Yeah, because the 911 operator said, you know, if the first towel fills with blood, go and get another one, expecting there to be so much blood, you know.
Yes, like, loads of blood. Exactly right.
Yeah.
And one of the things I remember, I did hear an interview with one of the paramedics, and they say that they had been to, like, you know, obviously scenes where one person has been stabbed once and there was loads of blood. And we will come to find out that Robert had been stabbed 3 times.
Yeah.
Right? So let's talk about the scene a little. Robert was found wearing shorts and a t-shirt on a made bed that appeared untouched. There were no creases in the sheets or the pillows, suggesting that he might have been placed there rather than have slept in the bed. It's like the pillow just has like a perfect head indentation, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I will post, I'll try and find as many photos as I can to post. But yes, it's quite odd.
I think there also is a possibility that maybe he hadn't gone to sleep yet, that he maybe was just laying there, you know, checking his phone or reading his emails, or he wasn't asleep. That's definitely for sure.
No, but the thing is, like, if he was doing that, then his phone would have been found next to him. Like, his phone was neatly, so his clothes were neatly folded in the room. And from memory, I'm quite sure his phone and his wallet was placed on top of them.
And yeah, and so he was in his underwear, or he was in.
Sorry, Robert was in his shorts, and so he was. Catherine says that what he was wearing was quite usual for what he'd wear to bed, but something freaking huge, right? Robert had his mouth guard in, and she says that he would put this in right before he hopped into bed, like obviously to prevent teeth grinding. But it's not something that he just like. You know, hang around with his mouth guard in. He'd put it in the second he got into bed.
No, so I've got a mouth guard for teeth grinding, and I literally put it in right before I fall asleep. Even if I'm going to lay there on my phone, I won't put it in until I'm literally about to fall asleep.
Yep. So despite three stab wounds, one of which was big enough to fit a hand in, there was surprisingly little blood on Robert's body, the bed, or at the scene. It seemed as though Robert had been cleaned up before being laid on the bed, like he'd been wiped down sort of thing. Now, a knife from the kitchen was found on the table in the bedroom, but it was later determined that it was too long to be the murder weapon. There is a bit of back and forth about this, but from my understanding that, you know, if someone was going to stab you, usually, if anything, the knife, because obviously the skin sort of presses down, the knife usually creates like a larger slit than what the knife length is. Does that make sense?
And yeah, and already red flags, because the knife was neatly placed on the bedside table, but Victor had said that the intruder took the knife. So why would a knife be placed on the table?
Yes. And weird. I don't think I've got this in my notes right. But again, when Joseph is interviewed, there is a little bit of sort of back and forth, because first he says that he found the knife, I think, laying on Robert. So he does talk about that, like he's touched the knife, so his DNA is going to be on there. But then I think at a later time he actually says that he pulled out the knife. So there's there's just inconsistencies with what the heck's going on with this knife, right?
Mm-hmm.
It seems as though early on both the police and paramedics found the scene suspicious. According to the police officer, when they reached their house, it appears that all three men, Joseph, Victor, and Dylan, had recently showered.
Yep.
By this time, all three men were in crisp white robes. Despite the seriousness of the situation, they all appeared calm.
Which I also think, like, if you think about the 911 call, Victor sounds distressed.
Yes, that's so right.
How in 7 minutes has he calmed himself down? You know what I mean? Like, weird.
That's what I found surprising, that because in the 911 call, he definitely sounds panicked. Like, Victor, I feel like, does sound freaked out, right? And he's scared. Remember in one of the things, the operator, she says, like, can you go downstairs? He's like, I'm too scared. Like, he actually seems scared. Whereas when the police get there, they say that they appear quite calm. Now, all three men are taken to the police station and they're questioned separately. In an interview, the EMT said that when he entered the crime scene, the hairs on the back of his neck stood up.
Yeah.
And this is like what you were saying earlier, like something didn't feel right. And the fact that there was not as much blood as they expected, and to them it just looked like the body had been wiped down.
Yeah.
An autopsy revealed that Robert had died from three stab wounds, specifically to the pancreas, heart, and right lung.
So all in that upper abdomen area.
Yeah. One of the most shocking things to me is that there were no defensive wounds on Robert's body. and the knife wounds were perfectly straight, almost surgical-like. So this means that both the killer and the victim were perfectly still. There was like an absence of a struggle, you know? If there had been resistance or movement, the wounds would have been jagged and displayed irregular patterns. So you can imagine, like, I can already picture, like, sounds really bad, but you know, like, if you stab, like, a piece of chicken, it's like, you know, when there's like, that actually, sorry, that's really insensitive. But you know what I mean? Like, you know, when you, I don't know, like, I'm thinking about when I put like a chicken in the oven and like, you know, you put like the little holes in there, like, usually the, there's a difference with the knife, I guess, if you use a good knife or a bad knife, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like it's it looks like it was set up. Like it looks like the stabs weren't real stabs.
Yeah.
That's the best way to describe it.
Yeah, exactly right. So it suggests that Robert was likely unconscious or incapacitated during the injury. So yeah, like I'm just thinking, like, I don't, yeah, the fact that it's this straight means he did not move an inch. And how the heck would you, even if he didn't want to move an inch, your body is going to do it.
Anyway,
exactly right. That's just like the normal reaction your body's going to have. And I'm not even talking about one, like, let's just say he was sleeping, right? And okay, one stab wound, maybe he was in a deep sleep and, you know, caught him by shock. There's three of these. And all three are quite similar in the fact that they're very, like, crisp. Like, do you know what I mean? They're straight.
Mm.
In the examination, the medical examiner found needle marks on Robert's body. Some of the places they were located was his neck, chest, foot, ankle, and hand.
Oh, my God.
Even after a standard drug test, they couldn't find any drugs in his system. The thorough analysis ruled out alcohol, cocaine, PCP. Oh my gosh, you're gonna have to help me with these barbiturates.
Yeah, barbiturates. Yep.
Opiates. Or go Boring. For it, Lucky. What's this?
Amphetamines. Sorry to interrupt. The drug test was just standard drugs. There was no tests done for paralytic drugs, which I think is a mistake considering the scene. But they only tested for kind of.
No, because I like think they did.
No, I don't think they tested for paralytics, which is like drugs that paralyze you.
Ah, interesting. Okay, I didn't know that. Yes. I know that they did test for date rape drugs like GHB, that benzo, whatever it is, or ketamine, right? But one of the things I did, and I freaking didn't write down this in my notes, there is apparently like a particular drug, right? And they didn't test for this. And what it is once it's injected in you, the body naturally breaks it down. So depending on when your body is like when this examination took place, it might come up, like it won't come up in a drug test, if that makes sense, because your body's naturally broken it down. So a lot of people think, and this might be what you're talking about, might be like a similar drug, or it might be one of those ones you are talking about. It didn't come up in the drug test because your body's already naturally broken it down.
Mm. Yeah, okay.
So they did find small petrol hemorrhages on Robert's eyelids, and this suggests possible strangulation or that he's been oxygen deprived. Like smothering, like he's been smothered with a pillow, which in my mind actually makes sense because we're going to get into it in a sec, but there's no defensive wounds on him.
No.
But this smothering, this isn't what caused his death, right? It was, like I said, the stab wounds. And, sorry, important to note that with those particular stab wounds, right, it would have taken a while for them to kill him. It didn't just kill him straight away. Robert was determined to have been sexually assaulted. However, testing revealed that the traces of semen on his genitals and in his rectum were his own.
Yeah, like what the hell?
Yeah. What the actual heck? And we're going to go into a potential explanation shortly, but this is the part of the case that just, like, I cannot figure out. Like, I've got a bit of a theory, but nothing fits like a puzzle, if that makes sense.
I think as well it's worth noting now that Robert didn't have a history of being gay, or like it's not his it was just not a thought to him.
Yes.
No history. Yeah.
And it's so important, exactly, definitely to note that. And Dylan, Joseph, and Victor all told investigators the same thing. And in Joseph's interview, he's like, he was as straight as possible. Like, he loved his wife. He's like, unless he was leading a secret life that didn't tell me about it, he's like, he didn't have thoughts, didn't ask questions, nothing like that. So definitely important to note.
Yep.
Now, the three men were interrogated for hours, with Dylan being interrogated for 12 hours. He was interrogated the most, and I think this is because obviously Victor and Joseph were sort of each other's alibis. Like, they said they were in bed together, whereas Dylan would have been alone on the same floor as Robert.
Yeah, and I think his behavior was the most questionable.
Yeah. Now, throughout the questioning, all three men stuck to their initial story. According to their account, Robert came over. They engaged in brief conversation in the kitchen, like you said, over a glass of water, and then they all went to bed. Dylan recalled hearing Robert in the shower as he drifted off. And I just want to say, which, you know what, polygraphs, I can't put a lot of, like, you know, like, I don't be like, whatever comes out in the polygraph is 100% true, and I would never take one. I think we've spoken about this before. Like, I just feel like, I don't love polygraphs, but I do want to say that Dylan did fail the polygraph that he took. So he did take one. Yep. So points to him for taking one, because I never would have, but he did fail it. And they only asked him two questions. The two questions were, did you kill Robert? And do you know who killed Robert?
Yeah.
Now, interestingly, which we've already discussed, the men referred to each other as a family and identified as a truple. And it's pretty much, like we said, like a three-way sort of couple. I've read Joseph and Dylan's relationship was like a violent, submissive, dominant dynamic.
Yeah, so I think – sorry to interrupt. So I think what it was, Dylan was the dominant
one. Yeah.
And Joseph was submissive to him.
Yes, and you know what's very interesting? In the real world, Joseph was the leader. So, like, even when police were questioning them before they took him down to the station, I read that I think Dylan went to, like, I don't know, say something to police or something, and Joseph shot him a look and he just shut straight up. Like, you could tell, police could tell that he was sort of the leader of the three of them. But in the bedroom, this was not the case.
No, yeah.
Right? So when police searched the house, they found in Dylan's room a collection. And when I say collection, I mean hundreds of sex toys. And this included, like, torture items, like BDSM. This is, like, gas masks, something to fly, like, your legs open with.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Restraints, cords, electrical shock devices, a milking machine, and I didn't – can I tell you, I only read what this thing was. I didn't actually Google it. I was scared, like, ads were going to pop up on my thing, so I didn't Google. Because, you know, freaking Google, whatever you put in there, it, like, starts to think you want to buy stuff. Anyway, so reportedly, like, this milking machine, this was capable of involuntary ejaculation, right?
Yeah, I think they use it on, like, livestock.
Yeah, or like, is it like paralyzed people? I think I read something like that as well.
Oh,
or maybe I read that wrong, but yeah, I'm pretty sure. Like, because naturally maybe they, I don't know. Anyway, we won't get too much into it. That's as X-rated as we'll go, but yeah. This potentially could explain what happened to Robert.
Yeah, and I think, like, all of this evidence in Dylan's room, it was clear that he was the dominant one and he used all this shit on the others. So, like,
but you know what? I don't know that Dylan and Victor had a sexual relationship. I think they were trying, and in one of the interviews, I think Victor sort of says, like, explains, like, maybe they're trying to get to where they were, all three were in a relationship. But at the moment, from my understanding, it was really Dylan and Joseph in the relationship, and Victor obviously was aware of it. They're sort of trying to bring him in on it, you know? So a knife set was also found in Dylan's room with the one knife missing.
Because Dylan was a trained chef.
Yes.
He was a chef.
I actually don't think I've said that, but yes.
Yeah, so he didn't work as a chef, but he was a trained chef, and the knife set was like, you know how chefs carry their own knife set? Like that was what that knife set was.
I feel like we did a case recently with a chef or a knife set. I can't remember what it was. I've actually gone blank. But anyway, although this knife did not match the one found in the room with Robert, remember there was that knife from the kitchen found in there? Its length, like the size of this knife, suggested it was a possible connection to the crime.
Yeah, the missing knife.
Yes, the missing knife, sorry.
Yeah.
And actually, you know what? I haven't got this in my notes, but like we will talk about it. Well, I don't think we'll talk about it later. So I'm just going to say it now, right? So Dylan's mum has said that she is the one that kept this knife because she gifted Dylan with this knife set, right? But she wanted to keep that knife. So she gifted him. And wait a second. And then they're like, well, can you provide this knife for us just so we can rule it out? She's like, no, I can't. Like I've lost it or something. So it's just like, obviously you're going to like try and help your child son. Or your son but I just felt like I should put it in there, right? So the towel Joseph used for Robert's wounds only had a minor amount of blood stains on it, and this was inconsistent with being pressed against Robert's wounds. Interestingly, the knife found in the room with Robert had traces of the towel. Of that towel, right? Not Robert's t-shirt. Does that make sense? So it's like this particular knife was wiped on the towel, but it didn't come into contact with Robert's t-shirt.
And I don't know if you've said it or if you have, I've missed it. But when the police arrived on the scene, I can't remember who, whether it was Victor, Joseph, or Dylan, but one of them said, like, oh, my DNA will be on that knife, but no one else's, or something along those lines. They commented on the DNA that was going to be on the knife.
Yeah.
Did you read that?
Yeah, I did. And can I tell you, as I said, I don't know if I've mentioned that directly, who said that, but I definitely know that Joseph said that his DNA will definitely be on the knife because he touched it. And originally, remember, I said he moved it from Robert's stomach to the table, and then in another interview, he says that he took it out. So I don't actually know what's going on there, right?
Yeah.
So the blood, so obviously police like are investigating this stage, and blood traces were found in the backyard and in like a lint, was that lint thing in the dryer?
Collection. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. In the dryer, suggesting an attempt to wash bloodied clothes.
Yeah.
The killer, according to the timeline, would have had to scale a fence without disturbing spider webs or the dirt below, because police obviously have now gone and checked all this stuff, right? So they would have scaled this fence. They would have entered through an unlocked back door, crept past Dylan's room to reach the study, stab Robert 3 times without any resistance, plant a knife from the kitchen, and then take the murder weapon with them and do laundry and leave the house without a trace. Like, it doesn't make sense.
The timeline is the most messed up thing. Like, because you think they said that it was 10:30 p.m. when they had the drink of water in the kitchen before going to bed, and the 911 call was placed at, like, just before midnight. It's just, it's not enough time.
And not only that, but not only – we know that Robert definitely got there at 10:30 or just after 10:30 because that call that he placed to Joseph to tell him he was on his way, I'm pretty sure that was from, like, the landline in his office, and it was – and the house wasn't that far away. So we know for sure that Robert, let's just say, was last seen, if anything, just before 10:30 p.m., and we know that Victor called the 911. I think it was I'm going off the top of my head here. Let's just say it was 12:48 That is not much time, Lockie, for all this to have taken place.
Yeah.
And you know what, though? I honestly – oh, actually, let's get into theories at the end. Because there's just something about – actually, wait, let me just say this. I don't think that they've done washing. I don't know how this blood – this – obviously, the – like, the dogs have hit on these places with the blood. I just don't see them doing washing. If anything, they've just thrown away the clothes.
Well, I think it was just the dryer. So I think, like – the you know how there was blood found outside, it was like they'd hosed themselves down or something and then maybe chucked their clothes in the dryer. I'm not sure.
I don't know. I feel like if you were smart, you'll just freaking throw the clothes away.
Yeah.
Which this is, I think this is what they've obviously done because there's no clothes found with that were bloody, you know?
Yeah.
So the police investigation revealed no sign of forced entry. The backyard, as I said, was not disturbed. The area around the backyard wasn't disturbed. But can I tell you, I don't know if you saw this. So Joseph's lawyer actually says that a neighbor had said that there were two perfect, like, imprints on, like, this thing in her backyard. So I just want to throw that in there because I guess that is after last week, I made sure that I looked at both sides of this because remember last week, it was just such a wild story and the police just did not even look into it. You know what I mean? Like Denise Huskins, like they're just like, it's too far-fetched. Mm-hmm. So I feel like because we're coming off the back of that story into this week's story, you do have to analyze everything, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, there was no evidence of a struggle at the home and nothing was stolen from the scene. Robert's two wallets, and I thought this was really clever. Robert carried two wallets because he had a fake wallet in case he was ever robbed. How freaking clever is that, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, his phone and his watch were all found undisturbed in the room he was staying at. So, like, what the heck's the motive here, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Now, two draft emails were discovered on Robert's BlackBerry, one to his wife, Catherine, and this was drafted at 11:05 p.m., indicating that he was showering and going to bed, and another to a colleague. This was at 11:07 p.m. and this was confirming a meeting, but none of these were sent, right?
Can I just say as well, but was it normal for him to email his wife?
Yeah, I know. That's something that I'm really not freaking sure about.
I know that emailing people regularly was pretty normal, but I just don't think that
by your phone. I don't know.
It's weird.
The only reason I could think potentially is because maybe email was free and text cost money back then. But then, yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I had a BlackBerry. Remember I told you I freaking loved my BlackBerry, like forever.
Yeah.
But that – I can't remember ever emailing from it. But, again, I was like a teenager, so it's at the same time, like it's probably not something I'm going to be doing on it. I used to use that like BBM. MM or whatever it is, like BlackBerry Messenger, and those were free, BlackBerry to BlackBerry. But, yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure about this either. And you know what's really funny? The fact that they weren't sent, they were only drafted, and obviously BlackBerries worked a little differently to, like, a normal Nokia. Back then I feel like Nokia was the thing, right? So they worked probably a little bit differently. So some people sort of theorize, was this particular – email drafted but they just couldn't figure out how to send it? Did they think it was a text? Like, what the heck's going on here, you know?
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, the information from the phone was lost. The police failed to copy its hard drive before returning it to Radio Free Asia. Like, honestly, this is – they pretty much lost any potential evidence the BlackBerry may have held. And – Radio Free Asia, which obviously you can't sort of like bag them for it because they wiped it and then like just recycled it, like gave it to another employee.
Oh.
Crazy, right? So 3 months later, so this is 3 months after Robert's murder, Joseph's brother Michael robbed the house, stealing over $7,000 worth of electronics.
Robbed his brother's house.
Yes, so Joseph's brother robbed his brother's house. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, Michael had keys to the house, leading to speculation about his potential involvement in Robert's murder.
Yeah, like I wonder what the connection is. Like, does the brother know Dylan? Like, what's the relationships?
Well, I think, you know what the thing is, right? I think that Michael may have been on drugs or just hanging with a bad crowd, like a bit of an addict. So that's sort of where, like, did he need money? Did he go in there to rob them? And he's come across Robert. Like, what's going on there, right? Police did investigate further and discovered that Michael had missed his, I don't even know what this is, phlebotomy. What is this? Do you know what this is? I don't know what this, this particular class.
Phlebotomy class? I don't know what that is.
I don't know either. But, I mean, if anyone knows, DM us. I should have probably Googled it before we got in. But, no, that's, yeah, so he missed this particular class on the night of Robert's murder, but nothing else sort of came from it.
Hmm.
Unless, like, I mean, I just think if it was Robert, I can see Joseph protecting his brother, but would Victor and Dylan really protect this guy's brother? I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's questioning their relationship.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Police suspected the men and theorized that Robert was restrained with the pillow over his head while one of the men injected him with an unknown drug, leaving him paralyzed or unconscious.
Yep.
They alleged that he was sexually assaulted, potentially by that milking machine, and then, like, I don't know what I mean, obviously some sort of sex toy, and then stabbed him, making it look like, you know, there was
an intruder.
Yeah, an intruder. It was like a break-in sort of to cover up the whole thing.
Yep.
Some speculated that Robert consensually engaged with the men but accidentally died, and then they had to cover it up. However, his wife, family and friends, which we've already spoken about, including the three men, deny this, insisting that he was straight and happily married.
Yeah.
You know what, right? I'm not sure if you saw any of the interrogations with the men. Did you see any?
No, I didn't.
Okay. So I do think that the police were a little homophobic in the interrogation.
Yeah,
they were, right? They keep making a massive deal about why the heck Robert would want to sleep over at a house with three gay men. And this does not make sense to me, right? Because the way I think of it is, like, he probably didn't see his friends as gay. He just saw them as Joseph, Victor, and Dylan. Like, he didn't, do you know what I mean? Like, it didn't go deeper than that.
Robert was very supportive of the gay community as well. Like, I just think they were his, that was his friend, and that was the way he was, and he didn't think twice about it.
Exactly. And Lockie, I know this might sound random, but, like, if you, Leah, and Danny were in a three-way couple, I'd still sleep over at your house. Like, I actually would. I have no problem with it. Like, you know what I mean? So I don't know why the police are so obsessed with, like, why is he there because you're gay? Like, I just think that's ridiculous. And they have said, they're like, we were just playing good cop, bad cop. Like, they were obviously just trying to get a rise out of them. That's sort of what they've said. So the three suspects attempted to resume their lives. Victor and Joseph returned to work, and Dylan completed his massage course, spending some time in Thailand. Over a year later, the three men were reunited and moved to Florida together, having sold that townhouse where Robert was murdered. Apparently the police absolutely mangled this house, right? Like, they pulled up, do you mean floorboards? You know what else they did, which really F them up? Remember how I was saying there wasn't much, like, traces of blood? Apparently they went in and sprayed all this stuff that were obviously trying to chase where the blood was, right? But they didn't use it right, and they just stained everything. So not only did they say, like, they're like, there was no other traces of blood. Well, technically the stuff they used, I don't think it was like aluminum. I don't know what the heck it was, right? But it ruined the townhouse, and it ruined their chances of finding any traces of blood.
Yeah.
In 2007, Kathy initiated a $20 million wrongful death suit against the three men, which was settled out of court a few years later.
And yeah, which I think, like, that's her only way to get a little bit of justice, because the police can't bring charges against them. You know what I mean? Like, it's the only way she can get something.
Exactly. And not only that, but they ended up settling out of court. I think all she wanted was for them to testify, but they pled the fifth. So she was just like, what? Like, she can't get any other answers. I think she just wants answers, right? You know that, right? Prosecutors did charge Dylan, Joseph, and Victor with obstruction of justice in November 2008. And in December, additional charges of conspiracy, obstruction of justice, and tampering with evidence were brought against them. So the police have gone after them for this because obviously I don't think they can prove the murder, or maybe they just don't know. And honestly, it is a very confusing crime scene. And yeah. I feel like the time obviously does not help to come up with a theory, you know. But they did go after them for these. Throughout the legal proceedings, the men maintained their innocence and stuck to their original story, not turning against each other. I think that's amazing. The fact that they've stuck together, like as in they did not turn against each other, the three of them.
Yeah.
So they obviously stuck to the unknown intruder theory. When this went to trial, a townhouse neighbor testified hearing a scream from the house but couldn't provide an exact time. His wife was watching like an 11 o'clock news report and placed the time of the – and because of this, they placed the time of attack between 11 o'clock p.m. and 11:30 p.m.
Yeah.
So this would create a gap potentially up to like from 15 minutes to 49 minutes, right?
Yep.
In the end, they were acquitted of all charges. Now, the judge did read, and this was a long-ass, like, statement about why she came to this. And, you know, like, she did make the effort to explain why. And she says, although the prosecution showed it was unlikely an intruder committed the murder, they didn't prove without reasonable doubt that the men were involved. And as I said, she goes into detail with it. And from what I can tell, like, even the prosecution, they're quite understanding. They're like, you know, like they get it.
Mm.
So Robert's case is still open to this day. I guess the fact that they've never actually charge them with murder leaves the door open, like they just need that one break, you know what I mean? Like, and I hope it's not over whether one of them turns against each other. Well, I guess now we can talk about like what you think happened. Like, I personally think I've got more questions than answers for you, right? Like, I can't understand how it happened so quickly, like in that time frame. The time frame really turns me off, like as in coming to some sort of theory. And just something which I didn't mention earlier, there was no DNA found, like Robert's DNA found on those sex toys in Dylan's room. But in my head, obviously, if they were involved, they've obviously thrown them out along with all the other
evidence
they had with a knife. Like, where's the actual knife? But yes, I'm pulling my hair out. What do you think, Lockie?
Okay, I think that the timeline is not real. Like, I think that the whole having a water at 10:30, that's not true. And the fact that they said, oh, we were watching Project Runway, that was they were using that to try and corroborate their pretend timeline. I reckon that Dylan wanted to have sex with Robert. And because he was dominant, he made Joseph be involved. I think Victor wasn't involved. You know, I think Victor was upstairs. And then I think they injected him, he died, and then they did the stab to make it look like an intruder. They hosed each other off outside, and then that was that. And then Victor obviously realized what was happening. I think the scream was Victor. I don't think the scream was Robert. But, yeah, that's what I think.
I honestly lean towards that as well. I was going to actually say that to you. For some reason, I'm like, I don't know if Victor was involved. I'm not sold on his involvement. Obviously, he helped cover it up. Like, he would have known what happened, but I don't think he was involved in the actual thing. I definitely think that Robert would have gone to bed. Because he put his mouth guard in. And that makes me think, like, who's going to, like, let's just say some theories out there, they're like, oh, he was experimenting with them. Why the heck would he go to do stuff with them with a mouth guard? Well, mouth guard, sense.
Yeah. I think Dylan had messed up fantasies. I think you can tell that from all of the stuff he had in his room. I think he had some messed up fantasy, and I think this was just that.
Yeah.
And, you know, Joseph just submitted to Dylan and did what he wanted.
Yeah. Yeah, I tend to agree that Victor's obviously come down. He's the one that screamed. Think about it, if they were both naked, like, there's not going to be much on them. I think that he died, obviously, or maybe he was unconscious and they're like, shit, they thought they had killed him, and then they used the stab wound, like they stabbed him to sort of cover it up. And I don't know whether they've wiped away.
Blood.
The blood kills me.
Yeah.
And so I was just going to say, I'll post photos, but if you see these blotches on the bed, they're so effing strange, Lockie. Like, it's so weird. It's literally a little blood blotch near the head and a little bit on the pillow and a little bit on the mattress and then a little bit further down, like upper back sort of. That's it. Like, where the heck's all the blood? But then in saying that, if he had to have been unconscious when he was stabbed, so which means he wouldn't have been moving around, which obviously the blood wouldn't have been tipping out everywhere. I don't know. It's such a crazy case. I'm so,
very weird.
Mm. So that crazy. Is our case this week.
Very weird. So if you have a case you want us to cover, you can send us a message on Instagram. Our Instagram handle is @caffeinecrimeandcanines, or you can head to our website and leave a request in the request box. If you want to support the podcast, you can leave us a 5-star review, head to our website to purchase some merchandise, or you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/caffeinecrimecanines.
And until next week.
Until next week.
Bye.
Bye.